Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, July 22nd, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney. I'm actually working in my hotel down in Washington, D.C. in advance of our first broadcast on Thursday night. We've got the Washington Nationals playing host to the Yankees at 7 p.m. And Taylor, I got my first real taste of baseball in 2020 when I checked into the hotel last night because Sean Doolittle was actually down in the lobby. And this Sean Doolittle, as you know, is one of the most engaging people in baseball. Someone who is so thoughtful and insightful on so many topics. We've had his recently had his wife Erin Dolan on the podcast to talk about some of the human concerns, the family concerns going on as baseball returned. And when I saw Sean, I felt like a rattlesnake, like he was just backing away. And I'm like, you know what? That's socially distanced 2020. That's where we are.
Interesting. So was it like when you guys see each other, obviously Buster Olney, ESPN legend, does he recognize you immediately? Do you say, hey,
how
does that interaction work?
No, we said hello, but you're definitely like backing up as you talk. Right. And the idea that you're going to stand in the hallway and talk to each other down the lobby for a long, that's just not going to happen in the same way, I totally get, because this is a math equation. The fewer people that you're exposed to, the better your chances you're going to keep, infection free. And that's where we are.
2020 baseball. Let's go.
So exactly. Well, social media blew up yesterday when this happened in the game between the Royals and the Astros.
Player bases loaded, nowhere to put him, and you got to come in and challenge him. And I'm going to say that hit Altuve and not the bat. It looked like a foul ball at first. And that's what Oscar Hernandez is discussing with Todd Tishner. So Altuve forces in Reddick to make it 2-0 Houston.
He doesn't have to throw on the inside or outside corner all the time to get guys out. His ball has such life. We saw it right there. He hits another batter just from the kind of the explosive life that he has in the on that fastball coming out of his hand. And it's just unfortunate that he can't find a way to consistently control that, because we've seen some spectacular games.
Yeah, so Jose Altuve and Alex Bregman got hit by pitches and social media went crazy. The pitcher wasn't throwing at them. The bases were loaded. In the Bregman's case, the count was actually 1-2. It was a pitcher who had an ERA over 6 last year. But that's kind of where we are with the Astros. If anybody gets hit, everyone's going to go, ooh, somebody threw at him on purpose. Clayton Kershaw is ready for opening day, and he and his manager, Dave Roberts, talked about that.
Very excited about starting opening day, especially when it didn't look very good for a while that we were going to get to play. So, I mean, I think just as far as the excitement of the season goes, very excited, almost a sigh of relief, really, that, all the 3 months you spent working and trying to stay ready, and then the 3 weeks here trying to get ready for the season might actually pay off into some type of season. And, like you said, our team has a lot of special guys, a lot of special talent, and it's not going to look the same. It's going to be a lot different than we expected, but at the end of the day, it's still baseball, and I'm excited about that. This year is going to be different, and I know that going into it, and there's going to be a new normal, and we're kind of getting used to that here. I think these 3 weeks are preparing us for what it might look like, and then, we go on the road, though, it's going to be completely different.
Yeah, so I was wrong. No Dave Roberts there. The Dodgers also announced that Gavin Lux, their promising rookie, who looked so good at the end of last year, is being left off the opening day roster. He was perceived in the organization to be behind. He wasn't playing as well as some of the other guys. And then the other day, he showed up late for a game and made some mistakes. And so he is going to start the year off the roster. Rays left-hander Colin Bochet will miss the season with a torn UCL. The Rays announced that Tommy John surgery has been recommended. That's a big blow for the Rays bullpen. Twins general manager Thad Levine says front office hiring practices are flawed in his organization and in Major League Baseball. He was part of a diversity roundtable on Tuesday. Indians players met with team owner Paul Dolan to discuss a possible name change. Terry Francona said the group had an honest conversation and he came away proud of how it was handled by all involved. And the Blue Jays are moving closer to finalizing an agreement to play most of their games in Pittsburgh's PNC Park It's not totally done, but that's the way it looks like it's going to go. And I'll be talking with the Jays' Joe Panik about that in just a second. Before we get to that, and before we get to Boog Sciambi and Paul Imbecides, check out the latest episode of Marty Smith's America for some more baseball talk. Chipper Jones joins Marty to talk about the sprint of the 2020 Major League Baseball season. Find it wherever you get your podcast. Joe Panik has played six seasons in the big leagues, including 2014 when he was part of the Giants championship team and 2015 when he made the National League All-Star team. And Joe, the other day I was talking with someone about the situation with the Blue Jays, the uncertainty about the home ballpark, and it was mentioned, well, the great thing is that the Jays have these great veteran leaders like Joe Panik. And it made me chuckle a little bit because you're 29 years old and you've become one of the old guys in this situation.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's crazy, you know, being with the Giants and having, you know, more of a veteran team over there. I was still the young guy for, you know, you said six seasons. Yeah. For the six seasons, I was always the young guy. And then you flip it a couple months later. And now all of a sudden you're, you know, one of the veterans on the team. So it's been an interesting, you know, a little ride here so far, but you know, it's been fun being the veteran, kind of hanging, you know, with younger guys and kind of flipping the role in that aspect.
We haven't gotten a formal announcement from the Jays that, in fact, you guys are going to play the bulk of your home games in Pittsburgh. But that's the momentum clearly building. How have you guys been following that news? How have you been learning about things, and how do you feel about the idea of playing the bulk of your games in at least one place?
You know, Ross Atkins, our GM, he's been actually really, really good with us communication wise. So, him and Mark Shapiro, they've been, you know, having meetings with us it seems like almost every other day, just kind of updating us on the situation, good, bad, indifferent, just so we're made aware of it, just so we know from them first before it comes out basically to the media, just so we're kind of about ahead of everything. So they've done a great job. And just kind of with all these meetings and stuff and just kind of talking with all the players, we kind of made it known that you can't demand anything, but we'd prefer to play in a major league park. So you know, obviously Pittsburgh's building momentum right now. And, you know, as I say, everybody's very thankful for the opportunity that, you know, that they kind of given us. And so hopefully it works out. I mean, opening day is a couple days away now. So, we're just all hoping that, you know, we could kind of make that one work and just kind of settle down for summer. So we're not living out of one suitcase and two duffel bags, a home and a road bag. So hopefully we can make this work.
Among the players, how tough was the news that came out the other day that Canada wasn't going to let the Jays and other teams come and go during the course of the season? Because it felt like a body blow from afar.
Yeah, you know, it was very, very disappointing. I'll just kind of put it that way. You know, the city of Toronto, you know, was great. You know, the province of Ontario was great. Just, you know, the premier, Doug Ford, they all kind of gave their support and they gave the okay. So when we were up there for our summer camp, we all kind of like, okay, you know, kind of step one was done. Step two was done. Now it's just waiting on the federal government to give the okay. And, you know, all the players, like, we were okay with the bubble quarantine aspect of it. Like, we accepted it. We were okay with it. Just the fact of, you know, it's going to keep us safe. We'll, you know, hopefully we'll be good to go through the regular season, you know, COVID wise. And then all of a sudden, you know, Saturday, less than a week away from opening day, we got the, you know, the big no from the federal government. And, you know, for a lot of people, it's disappointing because, for me, you know, I came to Toronto hoping to, you know, play in the city. Anybody that's been to Toronto knows how great of a city it is, the ballpark, everything about it. So now all the uncertainty, all the other distractions that we're trying to avoid right now, it's basically, it's just another challenge. And it kind of sums up the way 2020 seems like it's been going.
I've been asked this question a lot on different shows I've done, is how much does it affect the Jays competitively? And I say, you know, on one hand, yeah, they're not going to have access to the regular stuff. You definitely want to have that home base. And then I mentioned on the flip side that, you know, the fact that the Jays are a team built of a lot of young players, not grumpy old married people like myself, probably mitigates that to some degree. And the other thing, too, I said, but I've certainly have seen teams almost be, make things like this like a rallying point. Like the players, oh yeah, that's our challenge, let's go. How would you sort of assess the, you know, the how it affects you guys competitively?
You know, I think you're right. I think having a bunch of young guys throughout this process has kind of helped us. I got married men and guys with families kind of get over it, but kind of like, you know what, we're going to be okay. Wherever we go, we're going to be okay. It's actually kind of like the flip side of, you know, kind of the leadership aspect of how the young guys are kind of helping the older guys in that aspect. Yeah, I just think from a competitive standpoint, you know, I think if we could just get a home base wherever it is, it's only going to affect us and how we let it affect us, if that makes sense. I think that, you know, with this group, you know, and Charlie, you know, Montoya, you know, our skipper, you know, he's been great and kind of rallying all of us. It's going to be, you know, basically us against, you know, everybody. It's kind of, like you said, a rallying point. It's something like, you know what, you know, we're not getting any help from anybody right now. It's let's, you know, let's bond over this. Let's, you know, it's us, well, 30 guys now, us 30 versus everybody else. So it could be a positive, but you know, it's not a negative. It's not really positive. I think once it comes down to it, once you step between those lines, it's just going to be, you know, let's just go play some ball and move forward.
On the show yesterday, we were picking possible theme songs for you guys, you know, like Willie Nelson, you know, On the Road Again, Traveling Man, oh, gosh, things yeah. like that. I'm guessing that among you guys, you probably are going to have stuff, t-shirts, that sort of thing.
You know, I think we were kind of working on some things, but we have nothing concrete yet. So it'll be interesting the first day, you know, let's say our first home game, quote unquote home game. I don't know what type of theme song will be coming out. That's more of a Bo Bichette. He's the team music. He's the music guy on the team. So he's going to be the guy to kind of defer to as to what our theme song is going to be. But I kind of like On the Road Again by Willie Nelson. That'll be a good one.
What's it like to play in empty ballparks like you did last night in Fenway Park?
You know, it's just different. It's different. I mean, you're talking about an iconic ballpark, and to not have any fans, not have any, you know, you have the piped in crowd noise, but I mean, that doesn't really make any difference. Nothing can simulate the, you know, the fans yelling and screaming and, you know, all the noise. So it's, you know, it's just another challenge, and just to kind of stay mentally focused and just from an energy standpoint, you have to almost, bring your own energy to the park. So it's definitely going to be different this year, especially, you know, I'm just thinking about when you're, you know, in September, and those September runs that you have, and, you know, the last 2 weeks when you're a game out or a game up in the standings, you have a packed house and basically every pitch feels like a playoff game. And it's just going to be different. That's all I'm going to say.
How different is it to, in terms of noise on the field, when you're at your position, you know, the chatter in the dugout that you normally wouldn't hear when there are 30,000 people in the park, or even the broadcasters from their position. You know, I think of a guy, you know, Tom Hamilton, you had Dwayne Kuiper in San Francisco. You probably could hear those guys in an empty ballpark.
Yeah. I mean, you can have a full-on conversation throughout the infield, and that's what's really weird. Something as simple as a shortstop or second baseman relaying signs to like the third or first baseman, you know, on the pitch, you have to be really careful not to do it too loud, because, you know, the whole field will basically know. So it's, you know, it's just so weird, Buster. I mean, it's just different, and just something, you know, we're all gonna have to get used to.
Joe, among the health and safety protocol, when I first read them, I'm like, man, so many of these things players do reflexively and they don't even think about it. Among that list, which ones are you catching yourself like, oh, yeah, that's right, I can't do that?
You know, a couple things, actually. Instinctively, I lick my fingers, even though I'm an infielder. I lick my fingers just for kind of like grip, a little tack on the fingers. So I do that instinctively. There'll be times where I kind of catch myself, like I don't dip or do sunflower seeds, but I'll just kind of spit out in the field just if kind of instinctively, you know, whether it's if I dive and have dirt in my mouth or whatever it is, So there'll be times, especially during inter squads, I caught myself and I'm like, shoot, I can't be doing this. So it's just something, again, you got to try to just make conscious effort. And, you know, if you see guys doing it, it's just know it's not out of, nobody's rebelling against the protocols. It's more of just, it's trying to kick it. You know, for me, it's years on years old habit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no question about that. One of the things that with the Blue Jays context is, and where you guys will be playing your home games, is that there's a lot of hope for this team this year. Tell me about the talent that you see in this on this roster.
Yeah, just kind of seeing a lot of the young guys up close and personal this year. Because last year, kind of seeing from afar. Now this year, it's there's a lot of talent in that infield with Bichette, Biggio, and Vladdy Jr. A couple outfielders. I mean, I feel like this team will surprise some people. Even though I know the American League East, National League East schedule is going to be a tough one. I just think those guys, young guys, are ready to take the next step in their development. And then pitching wise, we brought in a bunch of veteran guys. We brought in Ryu from the Dodgers, Tanner Roark, Chase Anderson. Trying to think, Matt Shoemaker's back. I think just from a talent standpoint, I'm not here to make any declarations, but I think a lot of these guys are ready to make the next step, and we're going to have a pretty competitive bunch this year.
Oh, yeah, and especially in a 60-game season when, there, a lot of things could happen. In 60 games in the last year, the Nationals wouldn't have even made the playoffs. So you just never know. Okay. I appreciate your time. It's always great catching up with you.
Same, Buster. Good talking to you. Thank you again.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Jumping into the numbers.
After evaluating millions of pieces of data in the blink of an eye, the winner is Cincinnati by 200 points. Why, you worthless hunk of junk.
This is Hembo Knows.
And Hembo is Paul Imbecchietti. He's a researcher at ESPN who's a honcho on the show Get Up. He tells us he's the head honcho. What Mike Greenberg tells us is that he's just a wild partier that everybody admires. And with that as your qualifications, Hembo, I need to get your MVP picks for the American League and the National League in this 60-game season.
I promise you, Buster, I made this pick with a sober mind. So my pick to win the American League Most Valuable Player Award is Matt Chapman of the A's. He's finished in the top seven in each of the last 2 years. I fully expect the A's to win that division, and I think he's the best player on that team. In the National League, I favor Ronald Acuna Jr., who I think is really poised to have a huge breakout, probably the best power-speed combination in baseball. There are some other sort of more obvious, I think, names, but on ESPN.com, among the sort of quote-unquote experts, Acuna got more first-place votes than anybody, which kind of surprised me.
Now, the easy pick in the American League, of course, is Mike Trout. But I know when I sat down to make my pick over the weekend, the great X factor is what's going to happen with Mike Trout with the birth of his child, which I've never worried about that sort of thing. You know, we go into a regular season. I was curious if that was running through the back of your mind as well.
Of course, because in a 60-game season, look, we can appreciate Mike Trout over a full season because the amount of value that he accrues over the course of time becomes so much greater than anybody else. He is sort of the poster child, the darling of wins above replacement. But if Mike Trout misses a week of time or even close to that, that's an extraordinary amount of value that he's conceding to other players. And when you consider that, I think the Angels are likely to finish no better than third in that division. There are other players like Matt Chapman, Francisco Lindor would be another, Aaron Judge would be another that I would favor over Trout. Of course, it all comes down to health and safety with these guys. But even if Trout misses 5 games because of that, it'll go a long way in influencing his MVP candidacy.
Now, a tease that you sent me last night for an article you have coming out on ESPN.com later in the week is Mike Trout's not the best player in baseball. Please explain yourself.
I sent this over to the ESPN.com editors, and they said, you know what? That makes for a great headline. Send it over. So I spent the last couple of days putting together a piece, which essentially details that since the 2018 All-Star break, which is truly the time in which Christian Yelich became a superstar, he grades more favorably than Mike Trout, Buster, really across the board by most measures. By traditional stats, he outshines Mike Trout. In high leverage stats, he outshines Mike Trout. You can adjust for Yelich's ballpark favorability, and he still outpaces Mike Trout. The numbers indicate that he's a more feared hitter than Trout when you consider the volume of pitches he's seeing inside the strike zone and so on and so forth. So I'll allow the readers to go to ESPN.com on Friday to sort of to read the conclusion. But really the question I'm positing, Buster, is a year and a half, was a season and a half enough time for Yelich to surpass Trout as the best player in baseball? Perhaps not, but I do think it's high time that we started having the conversation of whether or not the answer to that question can now have two correct answers, because for the longest time, really since 2012 or 2013, when Trout really sort of established himself, the answer to the question, who's the best player in baseball, has been Mike Trout, and it's really been a non-conversation.
You know, the interesting thing, we talk about small sample size and how meaningful it could be when we talk about Trout, potentially being away from the team. And I was thinking about that the other day when I was on a Brewers Zoom call with manager Craig Counsell, and he was addressing questions about Yelich with how he's performed in some of these inter-squad games. Apparently, he's really struggled, and he's kind of, trying to find his swing again. Every player goes through this in baseball, but man, it really, I think, underscores how just a week or 2 weeks of struggle could, take down like an awards candidate, and potentially have a huge impact on a team.
No doubt. You and I talked about a month ago about how important at that time we were calling it spring training. Now we're calling it summer camp. We talked about how important summer camp would be. You can't afford to be in that position, Buster, because a bad week, like you said, will cost Christian Yelich an MVP award, even if he has an MVP season, because a bad week, as we know, is a bad month, for all intents and purposes. I'm with you. I'm confident that Christian Yelich is going to rake because he's raked the last year and a half. But how you start, Joe Maddon said it, how you start is going to dictate everything. It's going to dictate player performance to a large degree, and it's also going to dictate how front offices view their clubs, view opposing clubs, and it will cause the trade market to be different than anything that we've ever seen before.
Our first game, of course, we got Nationals playing host to the Yankees on Thursday night. I had Britt Jaroli of The Athletic on yesterday, and I mentioned to her that for me, the biggest concern about the Nationals is the question of who is going to protect Juan Soto, whether it's before him or behind him. And I asked her, give me a name of a candidate who would do that, and she mentioned Carter Kieboom. What do you got on him?
Well, you don't just replace Anthony Rendon, Buster. He's a top five position player in the sport over the last year and a half or so. And it struck me, this is only the third time in the last 80 years that the best position player on a World Series champion changed teams that offseason. Pudge did it after winning with the Marlins in 2003. Albert Pujols did it after winning with the Cardinals in 2011. So in other words, you could say that Keboom has more pressure on him than any rookie in baseball, but he does have the skill set to handle it. He has a really sound approach that contributes to really good walk rates over the last couple seasons. And they're also fortunate enough to have Asdrubal Cabrera behind him, just in case the game is still a little too fast for him, which it was last season. So Anthony Rendon, the lack of Anthony Rendon, the absence of him, is going to cost that team probably a win or two, which over the course of 60 games obviously matters a lot more. But Keboom is about as well equipped as any kid, I think, to step into that role.
And if you look at Keboom's swing, you will see little bits and pieces that remind you of Alex Rodriguez with the nature of his swing. What are your expectations for Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton, who will at least go into this year, it appears, healthy in a way that they haven't been the last couple of years?
Buster, Stanton and Judge have shared the same starting lineup just 127 times in the last two seasons. That's just 38% of all Yankees games during that time when you include the playoffs. Pretty remarkable considering the punch that they are when healthy. But a healthy Aaron Judge, to answer your question in a roundabout way, is the American League MVP frontrunner, just given the production that he's likely to generate, especially considering the players that he has around him. I'm not sure anybody is better protected than he is. The most telling indicator for me in Judge's case will be whether or not he's pulling the baseball, Buster. He pulled his first homer of the season last year on August 20th. He hit 23 of those during his breakout 2017 season. If he's getting the bat head out in front, I think Aaron Judge is going to be a monster this year, so long as he's healthy. As far as Stanton is concerned, this is a guy that hit 33 homers over a 60-game span in 2017, playing in a pitcher-friendly park with the Marlins. Now, on a per-game basis, three of the five most prolific home run hitters in Major League history are in this Yankees lineup when you consider Gary Sanchez. So you put those guys together for 60 games, they're going to mash. The question, of course, is how many games can they share the same lineup, because they've had so many issues. But over the course of a shortened season like this, I actually think a team like the Yankees, who has suffered so many issues with injuries, is going to play at an advantage, not at a disadvantage.
Our Friday broadcast is going to be Cubs versus Brewers, Cubs being the host. What do you got on the Cubs lineup? And Keston Hiro is obviously an important part of the Brewers lineup.
Well, the Cubs should average five runs a game. Pecota projects they'll score the second most runs in the National League behind only the Dodgers. But it's a lineup filled with, you know, all-star caliber players. Many of them, though, haven't progressed since winning the World Series. They've also regressed considerably on defense, which I think is a major red flag, because that is a pitching staff outside of Yu Darvish that just won't miss a lot of bats. I am lower on the Cubs than most. As it relates to Keston Hiro, though, this is one of my favorite players in baseball. As you know, he just mashes. What he lacks in approach and discipline, he more than makes up for with an outstanding batted ball profile. Last season, he ranked in the 89th percentile in exit velocity, 92nd in barrel percentage, and 97th in hard hit rate. He's a young star, a player who, alongside, you know, Christian Yelich and a few others in Milwaukee, should form the foundation of a really good lineup for a really long time.
All right, Hembo. Thanks for doing this, and thanks for all the notes you've been sending for a broadcast.
Thanks for reading them. This has been the best week I've had since before this quarantine started. So I'm really just happy, looking forward to watching some baseball games that matter this weekend.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
The man.
Swing and a high fly ball out towards left field.
The voice.
That one well struck. On its way. Out of here.
The legend.
And this place is going bananas.
Boog Sciambi on Baseball Tonight.
Boog Sciambi, the legend. And Boog, I actually thought of you when I had the ultimate 2020 moment last night when I checked into my hotel here down in D.C., because who was the first person standing in the lobby as I was turning in my car keys? it was our friend Sean Doolittle, who's as engaging and as nice and as, you know, the greatest guy ever. And I felt like a rattlesnake in the way that he was like backing away and, you know, and, right. and sort of with the body language, like, nope, we're not going to have a conversation here, which I totally get. You know, we had his wife, Erin on Dolan on the podcast, and we talked to her about the situation. And I'm like, man, that is the classic 2020 moment. You guys, I knew you could appreciate it because you love Sean.
Absolutely. I love Sean. He and his wife, I love the activism, and I think they both have great hearts, but I also totally connect on it. Like, I'm sure that it has to do with me being annoying, but yeah, there's plenty of people I've reached out to in terms of KBO stuff, in terms of just talking, that are just reticent in terms of, man, I don't want to go on the record about any of this stuff because it's complicated. I don't know what I don't know. Even someone like Sean, you know, it's quite, I mean, Sean is not shy. It's been quite clear that what he wants to do is he will put something out on Twitter, et cetera. But yeah, he wants to control the message and not be besieged. So that's kind of where that is.
All right. I heard you and Eduardo Perez on a KBO broadcast the other day bring up something intriguing. I'm actually going to spend part of my day following up on it, writing an article. So thanks for the inspiration about how teams will play it in extra innings. The strategy in extra innings, which will start with a runner at second base being placed there with nobody out. How do you think they're going to play it?
I think there'll be less bunting than people think. I think that the infiltration of front offices and just the math and the probability, you know, from the analytics side has now, there is more synergy now and more buy-in from people on the field than there has been in the past. Look, you're going to see it, but I do think that the area where 10 years ago, I think you would have seen it more is, I think 10 years ago, a lot of times you'd see more of it's the 10th inning runner at second and nobody out, and you move the guy over, you bunt the first guy. But as the road team, you don't want to play for one. So give it. Now, I think you'll see it. I think that you're going to see, I'm not saying never a bunt in the top of the 10th, but it's going to be rare, in my opinion. And I think that then that's where the home team has a real advantage, because then if the home team is able to prevent the road team from scoring, then yes, I think in the bottom half, you will see the bunt and play for the winning run. But I think you're going to see less of that get them over, get them in type stuff than people think.
Yesterday, the Dodgers announced that Gavin Lux optioned off the 30-man roster. Did that raise some eyebrows for you?
Yeah, I mean, of course it does. Look, I will say this. The Dodgers have so much depth and the ability to play Chris Taylor and Kike Hernandez. I mean, I don't think they don't get worse. You know, for a lot of other teams, they just have so much depth and they're so good. I still would say, and this is a drum that I beat on all the time, and it's a lot of – there are a lot of really good people in front offices. And in this instance, I do think that they believe that Lux needs a little bit of time and needs like a little mental break and just a chill period. But do I think it's going to play out into them manipulating service time and getting the extra year? Yeah, I probably do. And that's cheating. I'm sorry, but it bothers me so much that these guys do this when I've made this case a bazillion times. Everybody will tell you. Now, in this instance, I think it's a little bit in the middle. But in broader stretch, they get the advantage. And look, the bottom line is you want to put your best however many position players on the team, and Gavin Lux is one of those guys. That's just real. But in terms of service time, no one will ever say on the record that they are manipulating service time. Guys will always tell you off the record that that is what this is. If somebody filed a grievance, if, for example, Theo Epstein had admitted publicly that they were keeping Chris Bryant down because they were manipulating the service time, they would have lost the grievance. The Cubs would have lost the grievance. But they never said it. I mean, it's like this thing. Everybody knows what's happening, but as long as no one gets it notarized that they actually are keeping a guy down to manipulate the service time, then the player doesn't win the grievance. And at least in short term, yeah, it costs guys money. So it really bothers me. It bothers me a lot. And again, I don't think this is a pure case of it in this instance. I think there's a byproduct to it. But I will say it over and over again. This is cheating. It is cheating the player when the team's responsibility is to put the best players on the field. It really bothers me.
Yeah, during the negotiations, the labor stuff, we certainly got a window into the distrust and suspicion that the players have toward the owners. This is part of the reason why. You know, the example I brought up numerous times is George Springer, who's literally one day short of free agency because his service time was manipulated by the Houston Astros. If he'd been a free agent last fall, he probably would have gotten $180 to $200 million. Now, you know, in the aftermath of the pandemic, the context completely changing, he might wind up with $100, $120 million. I don't know what the numbers are going to be, but to me, it's unconscionable. And George Springer is one of the nicest, most positive people you'd ever want to meet in your life. And if he was cynical about this and he was distrustful and he had suspicion, who could blame him, Boog?
I will say this. Yeah, I totally agree. And I will say this in terms of the GMs, it always leads to this semantical discussion of, is that a word? Of, we're just kind of playing with the rules. Like the rules don't say we're not allowed to do it. So they do everything under the letter of the rules. But yeah, but come on. It's not right.
I really wish on the ownership side they would unilaterally address, you know, any tanking measures and service time manipulation. And I think that would go a long way to restoring a productive relationship with the union. But, you know, I also would like peace in the Middle East. We talked the other day on the KBO broadcast about managers and urgency. And we chat a little bit about Robinson Cano as an example of this, where he really does not look good. He's 37 years old. He had a down year last year. And I feel like that this is going to be an example of a team not having the luxury of time to wait. What do you think?
I think that it's funny. You know, you covered the Yankees and you know the market really well. I do think it's kind of a New York thing. Maybe they'll drop them and maybe they won't. But I will say this is the nerd in me. Their season is not going to get submarined because Robinson, like if they hit Robinson Cano in the third spot all year and he had a dreadful year, like that is not going to be the difference in their year. The writers are going to make it a big deal, and I get it. And I personally would want to try and make my lineup as efficient as humanly possible. But I think that if they're healthy, even if it turns into Robinson Cano can't swing it anymore and he hits third, the intangible distraction will be a thing. I don't think the mathematical component of him actually doing it is significant in any way.
Last one for you before you go. You talk to teams, staffers, general managers all the time. What's the sense that you have about the level of concern now that teams are starting to travel COVID related?
Yeah, I think teams are scared. I think, you know, it's funny. I think that from a manager standpoint, I think coaches are for the most part just natural optimists, you know, or at least the good ones are. And so I don't think they're as worried about it. I feel like front office guys, though, do feel it. They do, going over scenarios. And I think that, you know, you get into this bubble of playing in your own ballpark and you're not going anywhere. And at the beginning, it felt unsafe. Remember, Chris Bryant came out and said, I thought I was going to feel safe and I don't feel safe. And that sort of shifted. But I think when they get on the road and the first time, I don't know how, you know, the NBA, I think, is going to be able to get through it because they're just staying in that space. But traveling, I think, is going to be a real challenge. And, you know, the domino or cascade from a positive test. And look, it's a 1 o'clock game. 9 a.m. Someone has symptoms. You test. He comes up positive. Now you realize all the people that he's been in contact with. Okay, so he doesn't play. Then all these guys get tested. And whether it's before or after the game, let's say, you know, you don't know the results of the test and it's a getaway day. Does everybody get on the same plane? All these people that have possibly been in contact with a guy who's tested positive. Also, what happens to the player? Does he just stay in, you know, the city and it's like, all right, we'll talk to you later. Let us know how you're feeling. Stay in the hotel. I mean, what happens there? Do they send a doctor to him? And then the other part is the ripple effect in the clubhouse of, hey, guys, I know it's 3 hours the first pitch, but so-and-so just tested positive, our starting right fielder. What are we going to do? Or not what are we going to do, but once that happens, the first thing every player is going to do is get on the phone to their spouse or their girlfriend or their parents and be like, so-and-so tested positive. I was hanging out with him yesterday. Should I play? What do I do? So I do think that there's at least the potential of all those things that when I have asked around, there's a lot of, yeah, I don't know what we do then.
Yeah, and we could hear, we just got done talking with Joe Panik of the Blue Jays, and you could hear the uncertainty in his voice over some of the, you know, some of the issues, and he talked about it just being weird. It's just a weird time, and it's that sort of fog in the answers you hear back because people don't know what's going to happen, and they don't know how.
Here you go.
You know?
Here you go. 2020. You want 2020? We can put this on a t-shirt. 2020. The Blue Jays play their home games in Pittsburgh. The Penguins play their home games in Toronto. Good night, everybody.
Oh man. All right, Boo. All right. Well, stay safe. And I appreciate it. Good to talk with you as always.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Wednesday, and I've got a question for you. I'm gonna spring on you here. What was your first like outing into the world? I know you've spent a lot of time at home. You've been a good patriot, socially distancing. But was there anything on your drive or showing up at the hotel that you're like, we are living in a new era here?
Just as you cross, you know, you're going down and you're driving down the street and you look around at the people walking up and down and everybody's got a mask on. And that's the way it was this morning when I did Golic and Wingo. You know, I think I've told you this in the past. I don't like doing those early morning radio interviews in my room because you can just imagine the people in the adjoining rooms going, great, we got, you know, baseball guy in the room next to us. So I went outside and everyone walking their dogs and walking along the sidewalks and they're all wearing masks. And that is a very different, very different being in a city when you get that that visual.
Oh, yeah. Not just at the grocery store. All right, next up, we got Amy Chapman. Are you surprised that Kapler and the Giants have been peacefully demonstrating during the national anthem? And have you heard from your sources about any other teams or players that have similar plans?
Yeah, we saw it, Amy, with the Reds. And I think we're going to see it with a lot of teams. I think it's going to become something that'll probably gather momentum. A lot of players have made it clear that they're going to support their teammates. And it does remind me a little bit of what happened in 1997. When we had our first Jackie Robinson Day, Major League Baseball told players that they would be allowed to wear number 42 on that day if they wanted to. And initially, not a lot of players did. Some players did. But then over time, it became standard operating procedure. Now, on every Jackie Robinson Day, everyone wears number 42. And I think as this season goes along, you're going to see a lot more players kneeling during the national anthem.
Great comp there, Buster. Aaron Peters writes in at Aaron Takes DC. In the midst of the storm in DC tonight, which you said you were dealing with, I was thinking what happens in the current tight 60 game schedule with games canceled due to weather, given that there will be no fans, are they more inclined to have the 4 hour delays?
I think they'll be less inclined. Like there'll be less of incentive. It'll be more of a, okay, what does the forecast say? And there's not going to be that feeling of, we got fans here. You know, how should we handle this? So I think that they will be decisive. And if they have those getaway days when it's raining and that team is scheduled to not come, it's not scheduled again to go back into that ballpark, you are going to see teams, players, umpires ignore the rain. Like it could be a monsoon and you might just be looking at them going, why are they playing? It's because in this truncated season, there are just few available options to deal with postponements.
Last one for today. I've been saving this one from our guy, Eric Sorensen at Coach Sorensen 9. He writes in, hey, Buster and Taylor, do both of you feel a little more pep in your step in the mornings knowing baseball is going to be back? I know I do. What are you guys looking most forward to? I definitely have a pep in my step, Buster. I'm excited to not talk about not baseball anymore and talk about actual games. I love games. I love to talk about them. I love to create the daily product. So I am so here for the return of baseball. What about you?
Me too. But I got to tell you, now that we're getting close, for me in my job, there's anxiety. Like, I don't know exactly where I'm going to be during the game. So I have questions about that. I don't know if I'm going to have my setup. So the buttons that I push to put myself on air during the broadcast, I don't know how that's going to work. I don't know how the post-game stuff is going to work. And I've intentionally left those questions unanswered because I'm sure that they actually don't have answers. I know they're going to have a walkthrough later today to talk about where my position is going to be. But I've got a lot of anxiety building up about our broadcast. We have 3 and 4 days. You know, immediately to jump in my car right after the Washington Yankees game, drive home to New York. We'll do games from my home studio on Friday and Sunday. So I feel behind with all the unknowns. I got to be honest.
That's fair enough. Yikes. Well, I'm sure it'll get all ironed out in a hurry, I suppose.
And that's normal. Like, I would have that every year. Like, okay, what do I got to do? You know, where do I need to be? What's the place? Where's the place I got to stand? Where's the block out? Who's the cameraman I'm talking with? All those questions that I need the answers to.
It is all coming. It is opening day eve. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets. We had a ton of good questions come in. I can't wait to see the questions. We have actual games going on, so that's very exciting. And just a quick reminder, don't forget to check on your fantasy team. I know I did. This includes the Bleacher Tweeters 2020 League. And if you've been snoozing on your fantasy team, check out our friends over at the Fantasy Focus Baseball podcast to get you up to speed.
That's it for today. My thanks to Joe, Boog, Hembo, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color are something we must fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.